The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
You're very welcome back to The Hard Shoulder. Now, I'm delighted to say, joining me for the Thursday interview this week, the hotelier, the well-known hotelier, John Fitzpatrick. John, you're very welcome to the programme.
Well, thanks very much and glad to be here.
How are things in New York at the moment, John?
Well, you know, they're picking up, thank God, slowly now, very slowly. But it's good to see that, you know, all restaurants are open. And they, in about just about 2 weeks ago, we were allowed open indoor dining to 25%. Now it's gone to 30%. So, look, I think they're doing a good job. They're taking their time at doing everything and just slowly but surely we're getting there. You know, all the shops have been opened right through since, you know, the summer, and never closed. And even the restaurants, outdoor dining has been opened. So, look, and we got through the winter so far anyway. Plenty of snow, but we were allowed build, like, you know, all these restaurants have these little outdoor you're allowed build up kind of small with covers over them and things like that. So look, it's kind of in the positive side, it's kind of made New York a little bit cuter and more open. You know, you walk down the side streets and you see all these restaurants outside and things. So look, it's as good as it can be and it's getting better.
How's the vaccine rollout going? Have you got your jab yet?
Well, would you believe we did? I got my jab last week, my first one. And that's, I think, the real positive news here because, you know, they've started and basically they're going through the frontline workers, of course, and all that. And now, would you believe, just about 4 weeks ago, they included hotels and restaurants. And so any of the employees I have working with me have already had the opportunity to have it. Mm. Some of them have taken it and some haven't, but most of them have taken it. And so it's great. And so finally, I wanted to wait till they all, the ones that had it, that were working actually had theirs. And then I just had mine there on Saturday. So no side effects yet anyway, thank God.
That's interesting that they've recognized, I suppose, hotel and restaurant workers as you know, being out there, I suppose, on the front line to a degree, or being essential workers to a degree. Maybe we should go back in time a little bit and explain how you got to New York. Where did you grow up, John?
Well, we grew up in Wexford, the whole family did, because my father, one of his first jobs after qualifying as a hotelier was the Talbot Hotel. So my early days memories are living in Wexford and having a great childhood, I have to say, there till I was about 12 or 13. And, you know, Dad worked in the Talbot. So I went to the Christian Brothers School and we had a, you know, a great time in Wexford and grew up. Then we eventually then, though, moved. Dad got offered a job to work for P.V. Doyle at the time, the great hotelier. And he went to work for him. And so we moved to Killiney and the whole family moved. I think I was around 12 or 13 at that stage, maybe a little bit older. And he ran then, at the time, the Doyle Hotels, which was the Montrose, the Skylon, the Tower Tower and the Green Isle. So we moved up to there. And then eventually he moved on and bought Killiney Castle in 1970. And that was his first purchase. And as he told us many times, hocked the house, mortgaged it up to thing to buy Killiney Castle and converted that into a hotel.
And when you were growing up then, like, had you this, you know, itinerant sense of identity from moving around, or did you consider yourself kind of a yellow belly living up in Dublin, or how did you think?
It's funny you should say that. Yeah, when we moved to Dublin, we were all called yellow bellies, but we're proud of it, I have to say. Wexford was great. I really had a great childhood, I have to say, because, you know, in the summers we went to Rosslare and I had great memories of the summer. But, you know, Dad worked very hard, so you didn't see much of him, I'll be honest with you. I think that's my earlier recollection. You know, you'd see in the morning, you wouldn't see him in the morning because you'd be gone to school early and he'd always come at home late from work. So you'd see him around 6 o'clock in the evening He'd come home and while you were, you know, doing your homework or whatever it is, and then at 8 o'clock, he'd be gone by 8, and then you wouldn't see him again till the next day. So we've that memories of that are, even if you wanted to see him, the only place you'd see him is you went down to the hotel after school and he'd give you a lift home. So they were the early recollections. You know, he was hard worker, he worked very, very hard. And I think that's what he embedded into everybody too, after that, you know, you had to work hard to get to where you wanted to.
It's funny because I could imagine somebody with the same experience thinking, I'm never going to work in a hotel. I, you know, my dad, he's gone crack of dawn in the morning. He's home while we're doing homework, having a bit of tea. He's gone again. You know, that is not the life for me. But, you know, you looked at all of that and you thought, well, this is what I want to do.
You know, it's funny. Yeah, people look back on it and say, you know, that's crazy hours. But look, that's what hoteliers did in those days. I mean, when I then started, you know, I finished school in Blackrock College and went straight into it. And, you know, we used to call them the split shifts, where you'd start at 10 o'clock in the morning, you'd finish at 3, and then you come back at 6. And, you know, if there was a wedding on or whatever was on that evening, you were still there till 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock. So they were the early days hoteliers. I think I'm glad it's changed, because I think it was a rough life for anybody, you know, but you had to be dedicated. And it went back to what we said, is if you love what you're doing, you'll do it. And I don't remember anything else. I mean, as growing up, even in school, after school, the weekends, you'd go up and you'd work in a hotel in the early days. I know it sounds a bit corny, but you'd end up cutting the grass when you were that young, just make a few bob in the hotel, or you'd end up washing dishes in the dishwasher. And then eventually, when you got old enough, I think it was 16 or so, you'd end up being allowed to work in the bar, and you wanted to get to the bar because that's where you could make some money, and you're again just clearing glasses and then eventually serving. So it was just brought up in us, not just me, but the whole family, you know.
And was that your route into it? Like, I mean, was your first job cutting the grass up in Killiney?
Yeah, would you believe, as I drive through the car park regularly, I think of it. You know, you were, what was I, 14 or 15 when it came up to Killiney. And so, look, Dad was, you know, look, he was a great father, but he was also, the attitude was that if you want something, you have to earn it. So I used to cut the grass at the weekends, or during the summer was my job to cut the grass. And in the early days, was pushing a lawnmower around, I remember. And then we got this great thing that we could sit on, and we felt, God, this was luxury. And so that was it. And then and the weekends, working in the bars. But look, it was the same for us all. My brother Paul did it. And Patrick and Tony went into the construction business. But Etna was older than me, and she was there before in sales and marketing. So look, that was what you did. I mean, my father always said too, when I left school, we went into a management training program. And it was a kind of a 3-year course, and you worked in every single department. And we had a great management trainees, and that brought through a lot of great managers through the times. And we joined that program. We were one of the manager trainees, and that's what you did. So his attitude was, you know, you can't ask someone to do a job you haven't done yourself. And also, you need to know when you're querying someone on a particular, like food and beverage, or if you had somebody in, your food percentage was wrong. If you didn't know how it became and how to work it out, you know, that's what he said. You have to know what you're doing. So that's what he put us through. Yeah. And it was good, you know.
What were you like in school?
To be honest with you, probably shouldn't. I never really liked school. I was more of a hands-on. I liked school, but I was dying to get out of it because I knew what I wanted to do. I remember my final a few years, and I just couldn't wait to get out because I wanted to go into the hotel business. That's all I really wanted to do, and I loved it, and to this day I still love it.
Yeah, if you're just tuning into The Hard Shoulder, John Fitzpatrick is my guest, the hotelier, for the Thursday interview this week. So John, you love this industry, you want to get into it, you've got an easy way into it, your dad owns a hotel. I mean, why not stay and, you know, slowly take over the family business? What sent you to the States?
Well, look, progressed through. I did my training in the hotels, but I wanted to work in other areas too. But really, I just so wanted to try and expand. You know, I mean, you know, you're working in a hotel, you're working for your father. You know, there's positives and there's negatives to that. Anyone that works in the family business. But when I did that training, I came back and I worked in the hotel for about another year, but that's when I got itchy feet. I wanted to get back. And then I think what really helped me was I went to work in Chicago, and I worked in a hotel called the Holiday Inn in Oaklawn, because when I was in Vegas, I got weekend work at the Dunes Hotel, which is now the Bellagio. And it was just so big. It was like 1,500 rooms. And I'm coming from Ireland with 100 rooms. It was hard to get my head around how you can give that personal service in such a big hotel. Mm. So when I went to Chicago, it was about 150 rooms and a great, great hotelier at the time, Joe English, Irish, believe it or not, from hospital in County Limerick. And he gave me a job. And I felt more home there because, you know, as I said, it was small, was able to see it as a small restaurant and a bar. And I learned so much. Actually, when you work for somebody else, it's better. You get a better, a different feel. And you know what? So I loved it. And but about a year later, my father called me and said, "You're getting too fond of this. I'll get back here." So then I came back.
Right.
And then I came back and ran the Shannon Shamrock, her hotel in Bunratty, which I had a great few years down there. And again, Kleinie as well. And started off in the Silver Springs when we bought that. So, you know, it was Dad's dream. Always, he always wanted to open a hotel in the States. And his attitude was, you know, there's so many Irish bars, he used to say to us, all over America, especially in New York. And yet there's no hotels. But it was a big jump. I mean, it was a very big jump in the sense that, you know, we were a small hotel group compared to the likes of Doyle Hotels, Jury's at the time. And it was a big leap, but my father was very optimistic and nothing was impossible. And look, we had a great investment group, and NCB at the time were there, and we're under Dermot Desmond, who was heading it up at the time with us. And we just moved and we looked. Now, it took us a while. It didn't just happen.
Yeah.
We looked at New York and we looked at Chicago and Boston, and it just didn't happen. But we eventually got it in, it was 91, or just during the start of the Gulf War, we had looked at a hotel on Lexington Avenue the year before, and we walked away because they were looking for $22 million for a building that was empty and derelict. And we came back, would you believe, a year later and bought it for $10 million. And then we right. renovated and then opened it. But, you know, people thought we were a bit crazy because, again, the Gulf War had started. Why were we doing it? But we wouldn't have got in to New York if we didn't take those chances at the time.
And when people, you know, when you talk about the Irish pubs, you know, being, you know, ubiquitous all over the States, all over the world, and the lack of an Irish hotel over there. Did people imagine then when you gave that as an example or as a rationale that it would be the hotel version of the Irish pub? You know, maybe with kind of fiddles on the wall and maybe, you know, you'd have someone in Shannos singing every second Thursday.
You know, you hit it right in the head. Absolutely not. We came over, my father said, and the one thing we didn't like pubs in New York, we felt that you'd go by every one of them in those days and there'd be a green shamrock, a neon light in the window or something like that. And we'd say, God, things have moved on so quickly in Ireland and this. So our attitude, there was going to be no shamrocks, no shillelaghs. Our attitude was modern Ireland in those days as well. And for instance, like, yes, use Irish goods like Navan carpets. We wanted to have water for crystal chandeliers in the lobby and show what Ireland was about and more modern technology and to show. And we did. We educated a lot of people because a lot of Irish Americans did come into the hotel in the earliest stages and said, oh, we don't see anything real Irish. And we go, no. Ireland has changed. And we did it. And it was very hard to start. I think one of the lessons I learned was branding at that stage because, you know, you're in Ireland and, you know, everybody knows everybody and it's you open up somewhere and within, you know, months people know who you are and how you get going. But in America, I mean, when we opened that small hotel too, which would compared to some of the big ones around us on Lexington Avenue, you really found out because when you went to do sales calls, people would say to you, oh, Fitzgerald or whatever it was, they could never, you know, they even get the name right. And because Americans at that time, and they're still out, are very brand of their own, like Hilton, Sheraton, Marriott. But they need to look outside the box, as I said to them and said, you know, they're just kind of, you know, every hotel looks the same when you walk into it. We created a personalized hotel with personal service and the old hotel type service. And that's what it took a while to get going, but that's what made us successful here.
Yeah, was it difficult those first few years?
Oh, there was no doubt about it. I mean, when we opened, a great story. I remember we had opened and we had a, you know, we thought it was November. I remember it was coming into December. And it was coming up to Christmas. And so at that stage, I didn't know how the market worked out here. But, you know, all the shoppers came in from all over, not just Ireland and everywhere else, but around the States, because New York was for the theater and shopping and things like that. So we filled immediately. I said, this is great. We're really booming. But when January came, it emptied, and then there was no business coming in. And then that's when I realized we're not going to make this. So we had a great sales and marketing director at the time, Phil O'Regan in Ireland. And I remember giving her a call and saying, Phil, you got to get over here. We're in trouble. And I remember her coming over and sitting down with us all. And basically, you know, we had this idea in our head that there is so many office buildings and blocks around within a 10 block radius of us, that we don't need to be going to Chicago or Washington to try and get business. There's enough business in 10 blocks around us to fill a 100-bedroom hotel. So we split it all up, and we all had our 10 accounts on a Monday. We were given each 10 accounts to go out and do our sales calls. Even myself went out on calls. And I remember my general manager at the time, Dan, saying to me, the American guy, he said, but Mrs. Patrick, if I go on sales calls, who's going to look after the hotel? And I remember turning around to him at the table and saying, Dan, there is nobody in the hotel. We need to go out and get the business.
Like you know? The Shining or something. Rattling around an empty hotel, yeah.
It was good times, though. It was interesting and tough slog, but it worked in the end.
When you appeared on a lot of people's radars, and certainly when you got mentioned on news bulletins on this side of the pond, was in the days after 9/11. Maybe tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, look, we were established at that stage, and we had the second hotel in Grand Central opened. And it, you know, looking back on it, after it was all over, I said, well, my God, I'm glad we're through that, and we'll never see anything like that again. You know, meaning loss of life and just loss of business. Well, we're in another one now, which we'd never thought we would be in my lifetime. But going back to 9/11, it was scary, because I remember leaving my apartment around 9 o'clock or so, 9:15, and it's about a 15-minute walk to the hotel. And I made a stop somewhere on the way, and I didn't even know what happened. And it was my PA at the time, Donna, who called me and said, you know, you okay? And I go, what do I mean, am I okay? Have you seen what happened? And until I walked into the hotel at 9:30 something, I didn't realize. I think the rest of the world had seen it before us. It just was so sudden. And it just, the whole city came to a standstill. So, you know, as the morning went on, I remember walking into the hotel and seeing a lot of customers just sitting at the counter at the bar, where the night before they were singing and joking, and it was just dead quiet, but the bar was packed and everybody was looking at the TV, looking at the Twin Towers. And this stage, the first building had gone down, but the second one hadn't. So it was just a shocking morning. And within hours, then the second building going down, the city just went dead. And you could see people walking up Lexington Avenue, which was strange because you drive down Lexington Avenue. But there was hundreds and thousands of people walking, because they had all walked from downtown. You know, buses had stopped, taxis had stopped, subways, cell phone towers had fallen off the Twin Towers, which covered a huge amount of New York. So cell towers were down and cell phones were down. So there was a moment there for 2.5, maybe 3 hours, you didn't know what was going on. But as the day went on, you know, people came in, and, you know, and as the night went on, I remember we were getting phone calls from Ireland and people saying, no, my daughter's there, my son's there. I know they'll call into the hotel because they hang out there. Just look, get them to call us. Here's our number. And vice versa. We had people coming to our front desk and saying, you know, I know my mom and dad's going to call here first. They're going to call to see, am I okay?
Yeah.
And I remember we eventually just start taking names and numbers that morning, and then ringing the consulate and passing it on to them, because the Irish consulate here on Park Avenue were inundated with calls. So that's where we kind of got at the end the name of the second consulate of Ireland was Fitzpatrick's, you know?
Yeah.
So it was a tough day and a tough few weeks. But thank God, you know, we all came around it.
Yeah, and I suppose New York rebounded, and only the way New York can. You don't sound, John, like a man whose enthusiasm for the business is waning at all.
No, I love it. I mean, look, we're in really tough times at the moment. And we, as I said earlier, look, we never thought after 9/11, first of all, you'd have that much loss of life. Let's put it that way. But look what's happened over the last year. But there's light at the end of the tunnel, and New York is New York. And it's not just us now. It's the whole world is in the middle of this pandemic. But we do see it coming to an end, and it'll be a while. It's not going to come in the next few months, but I hope by the end of the year, we have some sort of normality back. And, you know, it's funny because at the moment, it's New York, like any big city, people moved out immediately, and like they did with 9/11. That's what I remember most. You know, families decided, oh, I'm not staying in New York, and they moved out to Long Island, New Jersey, and all that. But that's all temporary.
Yeah.
Because New York is New York. It's when, you know, Broadway is, they're talking about opening again later on in the year. And we're talking about just yesterday, the governor announced it, that they're going to open outdoor gatherings to 200 people and indoor to 100. And it goes to 150 if they're pre-tested. This all starts April 2nd. So we see it coming back, and New York is New York. New York will come back, you know?
Nice positive note to wrap things up on. John, we'll have to come out and visit you by the end of the year. Great to talk to you.
Listen, great to talk again, and I'm looking forward to everybody coming back again here very soon.
I'm sure you are. John Fitzpatrick, the hotelier of the Fitzpatrick Hotel Group. That's our lot for today's edition of The Hard Shoulder. You can listen back to that full interview with John. It'll be up very soon on the News Talk app. Off the ball, I should say. They're up next. I'll be back tomorrow from 4. Have a good one.